And I can see I was a fool not to have known that it could never be the same for you and me. After the storm, sometimes a kind of blue sea, but it wasn't meant to be. No, it wasn't meant to be. Sail away, my love, sail away. Your ship is leaving shore. I won't hold you back anymore. Sail away, my love, sail away. What more could I have said or done? You know you were the only one. I took for granted our happy home.
Greetings, everybody. This is Pat.
And like a siren from the sea, she stole your love away from me. Now I'm alone.
I just returned from the Mofan Symposium.
With only memory of all the years of you and me, but it wasn't meant to be. No,
it wasn't meant to be. I will be going to contact the desert next on August 8th to August 11th. That will be a lot of speakers plus a CE5 event with Spectrum on Monday night. I'll be going to all those things. I hope to see you there. Please reach out if you need me.
Sail away.
August 28th, I will be going to the extraterrestrial intelligence and the conscious connection.
What more could I have said or done?
This will be very different because
you know you were the only one
presenting lectures during the day. We will also have 3 nights of CB5 protocol activities.
So starless night in the whisper of the wind, you'll hear me sing, Lamed. And if you're afraid and feeling all alone, close your eyes and I'll be there. hold you back anymore. Sail away, my love. Sail away.
Whatever Stephen Bassett says, you know, like it's a play that I want to share with everybody. I asked him and he said, I can do what I want with this. This was his slideshow presentation and he had the photo evidence to go with this. He starts out by saying, we live in
Hi,
a dirty and dangerous
Hi, this is Mark
world.
Omei. I'm
Democracy
really glad you're listening to bbsradio.com. If it's not mainstream.
In 1963, Katharine Graham, she went into the Washington Post that the year that Kennedy died, and she gave a speech at the CIA, and only one publisher of a newspaper has ever given a speech at the CIA. This is the intersection at which we prosecuted the Cold War and the ET issue. In 1944, Generoso Pope Sr., publisher of Il Progresso, an Italian newspaper, was friendly with a lot of politicians, and he had a son who was named Generoso Pope Jr. He was an MIT graduate. At age 20, he was very intelligent. And in 1969, he took over his father's papers and began to run them. He entered into the CIA between the ages of 21 and 22. He spent a year studying psyops at the CIA. And Frank Costello, who was a mob figure, gave a donation of $27,000. And he used that money. He bought the New York Enquirer and reconfigured it as the National Enquirer. Fortune, who was the brother, and Gene Jr. Anthony and President Truman were all pals. And Stephen Bassett shows a picture of Truman shaking their hands, holding his hands out on either side of him and shaking hands with these guys on either side with a big smile on his face. And this was very salacious stuff. And they stuck it in every rack at the grocery store. You know, the regular newspapers, New York Times, the Washington Post, all those other papers were over in the corner of the grocery store. Sometimes they were out in the street. You had to go get them out in the machine. Not the National Enquirer. It was looking at you while you were waiting to check out. And this was for decades. Stories about UFOs and ETs and every other mixed bag disgusting story they would want to add in. We're sitting in those newspapers staring at us, and we bought them up, and we bought them up, and we bought them up, and we read them. And we got programmed. We got programmed on the deepest level about this story. And in 1968 was the last time they ever held a congressional hearing on the UFO issue. And it only lasted one day. Then we had the Condon Report come out, which closed down Project Blue Book. So I'll just interject here. You guys all know what the Condon Report is, right? This is a wiki. The Condon Committee was the informal name of the University of Colorado UFO Project, a group funded by the United States Air Force from 1966 to 1968 at the University of Colorado to study unidentified flying objects under the direction of physicist Edward Condon. Now, this Condon Report was written because it was intended that it should shut down Project Blue Book. So in other words, Project Blue Book had all these cases from the U.S. Air Force, and they were conducting formal studies of UFOs, and the Condon Report came behind and said, no, none of this stuff is true. And the folks who knew better, like James E. McDonald, called the report inadequate, and that it only represents a tiny fraction of most of the puzzling UFO reports. Also, astronomer J. Allen Hynek wrote that the Condon Report settled nothing. So the whole idea behind the Condon Report was that it was to get the government out of the UFO business. They were kind of sick and tired of having the truth embargo in place that they put in place in 1947 because, frankly, they were scared of E.T. They had the crash saucers. They had the recovered bodies, live bodies, talking to them from 1947, and they didn't know what to expect in the future. So they started the truth embargo, and after a while, they're like, not sure we want to do this anymore. That was the point of the Condon Report, to shut down Project Blue Book. After that, they threw out Donald Kehoe. They closed him down, said that he had had quote-unquote financial improprieties, and that was the end of that. Until, enter 1978, Stanton Friedman, when he was introduced to Jesse Marcel Sr., and that was the end of that. Stanton Friedman pulled the government back in. In 1979, we had the Weekly World News, and its job was to depict presidents or presidential hopefuls as being involved with the UFO issue. And that made anyone who was a president, a sitting president, or to be elected president look like a fool. So if you can remember the front covers of the Weekly World News starting in 1979, they were pictures of our presidents standing with extraterrestrials in some ridiculous headline. They also wrote articles about crop circles, alien abductions, space aliens captured by the U.S. Navy, our UFOs abducting cows, and things like that. And they made everything to do with the UFO ET topic a ridicule. Then came along Paul David Pope. That was the grandson of the original Italian newspaper owner. And he wrote a book called The Deeds of My Fathers, and he worked for the CIA. And he put out a story explaining how the National Enquirer, which now has become the Enquirer and is still on the newsstands, was used as a CIA psychops operation. Now, in 2011, on the We the People website, there was a reply to the first Paradigm Research Group petition to formally acknowledge that the human race has engaged with extraterrestrials and release all the files. There were 12,000 signatures. And on November 4th, we had a reply from the White House. And it said the U.S. government has no evidence human race has ever engaged with extraterrestrials. And that is indefensibly false. This might have been a deliberate move. It's the first time the executive branch ever put their position in writing about extraterrestrials. But the press has not challenged the position, and the press may challenge the position. They may challenge it. Why haven't they challenged it yet? Since then, there have been a number of petitions pointing out evidence they said didn't exist. Then we had the citizens' hearing on disclosure. This was to set the stage to end the truth embargo, to destroy the truth embargo, and for the press to blow wide open. But that didn't happen. The motto of the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure was, if Congress will not do its job, the people will. So when we had the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, we had Senator Gravel, Congressman Bartlett, Cook, Hooley Woosley, and Kilpatrick, Joe Buchanan, and Daniel Sheehan. We had 42 witnesses. It cost $700,000. It was an unprecedented 30 hours of testimony. We will take the results of the citizens' hearing on disclosure and bring them to Congress and ask for congressional hearings. The Congressional Hearings Initiative will begin on November 5th, 2014. In the past, we had other congressional hearings, and they were covered by the media en masse. The McCarthy hearings and the Watergate hearings were covered en masse. The Iran-Contra hearings were also covered. Not much happened from them. We also have the Supreme Court hearings, which are the hearings where they decide if an elected Supreme Court justice will be voted in. And this is kind of a kabuki theater. People have gotten turned off by the hearings. We had the tobacco hearings that didn't do much, but now, recently, we've had the Benghazi attack hearings. We've had the VA scandal hearings. We've had the Bergdahl prisoner swap hearings. Recently, the ISIS hearings, immigration crisis hearings, the refugee crisis, and we have all of these hearings now. So it's better that we hang back and wait until after the election, because after the election, there won't be any issues to tout, and there will be no one to elect because the elections will be over and the hearings will go away. And it will be a quiet lull, and it will be the perfect time to introduce congressional hearings on the extraterrestrial issue. The last time we had hearings on the ET issue, we had one hearing in 1966 at the House Armed Services Committee on UFOs. And since then, in 1968, we had UFO Science and Astronomics Committee, House of Representatives. Stanton Friedman was there. Dr. James McDonald testified. And later, Congressman Ryan was killed in Central America. He was killed in the Jonestown incident. We're still looking for a video record of the 1968 hearing. That hearing was to stop any future UFO hearings. On November 5th, starting the day after the election, the other hearings will calm down. The Congressional Hearings Initiative is built around the DVDs from the citizens' hearing. There are 10 DVDs that are going to go out to 10,000 staffers of the 535 members of Congress. 8 days before they are due to arrive, the international press releases, and we will begin a tweet storm. And we will be sending tweets and emails requesting they open this box and look at the DVDs and that they talk to Steve and that they schedule congressional hearings. And the tweets we send will say, we want you to talk to Stephen Bassett. And we will have a coordinated effort, and you can find this on the Facts on Washington website. And the whole point is, if we can get real committed people to rain tweets and emails as the DVDs are going to their office, we need to get them to open the box. We're looking to raise an additional money, $20,000 to $40,000, to hire a publicist, which, and the purpose is to get Stephen Bassett on every national talk show in Washington, D.C. The tweet storms coming in for 5 days after they look in the offices. To the members of the services committees, the OSTP committee, and we will encourage that 4 or 5 members go to the committee chair and say, let's give this a chance. And then the truth embargo will be over, and every congressional hearing since 1968 has been closed down. And why will these work? What is different now since 1997? Congress was doing better then. Now they have low approval ratings, lower than dirt. Stephen Bassett is here to change history, to tell the truth. The witnesses, what they're saying some very intelligent things. So when they see the DVDs from the citizens' hearing, what they will see is Stephen Bassett changing history and telling the truth. They will see these very intelligent witnesses saying very intelligent things. They will see their other members of Congress listening intently, and they'll hear the audience clapping. Well, that wasn't supposed to happen. It's not allowed, but it did sound good on the videos. And seeing there is no risk here, this is what it'll be like. We have taken the risk element out. Don't say anything. Go into the hearing room, listen, and ask a few questions, and all the international press will be pointed at them. And maybe make history and make the work. If enough people get to the door, they will help them get to the hearings. We will send 25 witnesses to Congress on the most powerful issues, former Air Force officers, and they will be testifying under federal perjury charges. Then it's over. Then the military and intelligence and the White House will get together. And the president just may strike a deal to the nature of disclosure. The Congress may announce, or President Obama may trump first. It can happen either way, and it is inevitable. Then the knowledge of the presence of extraterrestrial ends for the last 67 years, ends in a miracle. 2% of the general population, that's 6 million people, are contactees. There are 539 members of Congress. 2% of Congress is of 11 contactees on the Hill. Out of the 10,000 staffers, 2% of them, 200 of those are contactees. We have 67 years of secrecy and lies embedded in the truth embargo. We have to break through it. That is what an advocacy movement is all about. To end the ET truth embargo, we must have a formal acknowledgement by governments. And why do we need the government to tell us about that? No one wants another war anywhere. If government wants one, we will have one. When we end the truth embargo, we end the government's reason for perpetual war. And that's enough of a reason. So I just want to add my two cents to the end of this. I've been speaking to many people lately. Some of them are exopolitics experts. Some of them were the people at MUFON. And I would introduce myself as someone who does advocacy movement for Paradigm Research Group for the purpose of disclosure 7 days a week, that I blog on the subject and I have a radio program. And that I would ask them, what do you think of Stephen Bassett's work? And they would say, oh, he's the best. He's the best. I agree with everything he says. And then I say to them, well, how do you feel about disclosure happening with the president? And they say, no. Government's never going to give up its control. Never going to do that. It's never going to happen. So even though Stephen Bassett has a great approval rating, most of everyone I talk to says they don't believe that we could ever get disclosure this way. And I work on not being disheartened when I'm hearing this. And instead, I ask the folks I'm speaking to suspend all disbelief and to know that there's no way that they have the exposure to these high-ranking individuals in our Pentagon and our intelligence agency, and there's no way they can understand the disaffected Congress. And so suspend all disbelief, and for the next few months, think with your heart, and hold the vision for disclosure coming through President Obama, going up to the podium and saying one sentence: we are not alone in this universe. Make it a potential in your heart. And instead of stomping your foot and saying, no, that's never going to happen, set that aside. Set that thought aside. You really have no basis for that opinion, except for a lot of misinformation and a lot of misspent hours watching YouTubes. That was something that they programmed in there for you to believe, just like the National Enquirer. Suspend all disbelief. And instead, for 4 months, give me 4 months of your time. Give me 4 months of thinking with your heart. And put out into the collective consciousness, we can have disclosure now. We're going to join together to make a Twitter storm. We're going to join together to send emails. We're going to call out to the media to do their job. And together, we have the best possible scenario that has ever been available, the best potential ever available since this began, to end it all. And we're going to join together and we're going to end it all. So for the next few months, put aside your criticisms. And wake up to the reality that's right in front of you. Many, many, many people died to make this moment possible. So live it to the fullest. Namaste.
Okay, that's the end of it. Hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Now what I'd like to share with you is an interview I did with Danny Sheehan last week. And he's talking about this great retreat they're going to have in Toronto, where we're going to call in the ships and we're going to have landings. The landings part isn't guaranteed, but I invite you there. I hope you'll come. It's going to be a miracle. Here's the interview. Enjoy it.
But I greatly recommend it. It reads like these great stories that you usually watch up on the screen, but they're all true. It's fantastic. Danny, welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Beth. I appreciate being here.
Very nice to talk to you. If you don't mind, I'm going to jump right into the first question.
Sure, let's do it.
I've been working with exopolitics many years, and I've seen develop two schools of thought regarding disclosure. One is that a few men within the Pentagon, intelligence, and Magic 12 will decide the moment and go to the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, President Obama, and invite him to go on TV to say we are not alone in this world. And the other is that there will be a forced Miss Your event. Please, can you share your thoughts regarding how humans think about these big questions and what role spirituality and cosmology play in these perceptions of these questions?
Okay, sure. Now, let me address the first part of the question first, and that is these two hypotheses about how disclosure will take place. The first one being that there's a small number of general officers and officials that are in communication with Majestic 12 who will go to President Obama and give him the direction to issue the statement. Or the second option, and that is there'd be some sort of force majeure that will require the president to do that. It's important to point out that based on 45 years that I've had of working with national security information and national security information and investigations of this kind, and with years of familiarity with this issue, that the people who are hypothesizing those two different scenarios really don't have the slightest idea what they're talking about.
Agreed.
Those are just things they pull out of the air and say this is how they think it might happen.
Right.
And that they're proposing those things. But then the reality is that 99.9% of the people who are saying either one of those two things really don't know what the details are. They have virtually no experience with people at that level and are just guessing how that would go. Now, my own particular opinion about this is that you can see a process presently underway pursuant to which, for example, the Roman Catholic Church has held major conferences and press conferences in Rome. They've held gatherings of worldwide scientists about this, and they've started to issue a threatened order through the head of the Pontifical Observatory and others. Statements about the search that is going on right now for planets. And we put up two major satellites that are searching for planets around the various star systems. And as you know, we're starting to find hundreds and hundreds of planets just in the last 4 years.
Right.
And what's happening is that they're starting to identify larger and larger numbers of these planets as being in what they call the Goldilocks zone, which is that given the size of their particular star, that they are at a perfect distance to be not too hot and not too cold, and that they appear to have atmosphere and potential liquid water. And so they're starting to look for qualities in these planets that would be very supportive of the evolution of life on those planets, similar to that which occurred here. Now, that is a slow process, and what they're doing is, rather than addressing the issue of thousands of sightings of UFO vehicles and hundreds of accounts of people who have had direct face-to-face encounters, allegedly, with the ET beings here on our planet, they're avoiding that issue, and they're going through this other soft path of just announcing that they will, before very long, the Catholic Church has already announced that they believe that based upon the discovery of these planets, that there is a very high probability that life exists elsewhere in our galaxy,
right,
other than just on our planet, and they've asserted that it is almost certain that a number of highly intelligent, highly technologically developed civilizations exist right within our own galaxy. And the question as to whether, and they stated, they believe that it is reasonable to assume that in the comparatively near future, that would mean within the lifetimes of most people alive now, that we will confirm that life exists elsewhere in the universe.
I sure hope so.
In my opinion, what they'll do is they'll announce first that they believe that microbiotic life exists, then they'll announce that they think that slightly more complex life than this. Then they're going to do this through a slow, progressive process, and then they will eventually assert that they believe that another highly technologically developed civilization exists in our galaxy, and they will attempt to do establish communications with this extraterrestrial civilization all the time, completely ignoring the information and evidence about UFOs that have been seen and alleged encounters face-to-face with extraterrestrial beings, all the accounts of extraterrestrial beings having their bodies having been recovered at Roswell, or an extraterrestrial being having been captured and brought to Edwards Air Force Base or to Patterson Field. They don't want to address those things that entail the possibility of having to acknowledge that there has been a 60-year cover-up by the federal government or other governments in coordination with us. They're going to try to avoid that entire question and just slowly unfold these increasing discoveries that are being made in the purely scientific field vis-a-vis these other planets that are being discovered now. So I believe that's how that's going to happen. Now, let me, in fact, address the second part of the question.
Okay.
That is, how do these opinions about what's going on with regard to disclosure and with regard to what this UFO phenomenon is and the ancient phenomenon is, how does that relate to a person's opinion about cosmology or other very sophisticated questions? And this is something that I'm going to be addressing at the conference in Toronto at the end of August, the last week of August. What I'm going to be explaining is that this issue of the public policy question that faces our human family right now about what to think about the UFO phenomenon, what to think about all of these reports of face-to-face contacts with extraterrestrial beings, how to deal with this profound question about what impact the actual discovery and confirmation of the existence of an extraterrestrial civilization in our galaxy and other ones. What impact that's going to have on people. All of that has to do with an individual person's worldview.
Right.
And what I'm going to be talking about at length is that this issue of extraterrestrial intelligence and its relationship to our human family is a profound and important public policy question. And just like any other public policy question, the opinion that a person has about that, at least initially, is completely derivative of their worldview. And this issue of worldviews is something that I, after having graduated from Harvard College in 1967 in the field of constitutional law and American government and international relations, and then going on to Harvard Law School and graduating in the field of constitutional law and international law, after practicing out in the world for a number of years and doing the Pentagon Papers case in the New York Times, in the Watergate case when I was at Emily Bailey's office, and initiating the case to establish the right of journalists to protect their confidential news sources. And these were all done in the first few years after I graduated from Harvard Law School. I ended up going back to Harvard University to study this particular issue about alternative modes of ethical reasoning that people engage in.
Right.
And I ended up doing my master's work there at Harvard Divinity School and then opening on to the into my PhD program to study this issue. And what I discovered is that Talcott Parsons, who was the chair of the Department of Sociology at Harvard University for 35 years, has determined, based on thousands of interviews of different people in different parts of the world, he had determined that if you confront a given individual with a given public policy problem, that the community in which that individual is, if you confront the community as a whole with that question, our human family will divide ourselves into, in his opinion, five very specifically different and distinct groups. I've done additional research on that, and I came to the conclusion that in fact there is an octave on different views, different world views. And they range all the way from on the extreme right of the spectrum. And Talcott Parsons at Harvard University is the one who developed this left-right wing spectrum. Where they say that a particular person is a left-winger or a right-winger. And then this political spectrum is a spectrum of worldviews, really. And they range all the way from on the extreme right, there is an authoritarian worldview. And one step to the left on the political spectrum generates a conservative worldview. Mm. Or excuse me, a reactionary worldview. There's an authoritative worldview, a reactionary worldview, a conservative worldview, then a moderate worldview, then a liberal worldview, then a progressive worldview, and then there's a utopian.
Mm.
Now, you'll notice that that's only seven worldviews.
Right.
What I have determined is that because of this very important issue of the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence, there's going to be a new eight-paradigm worldview that is going to have to be developed among our human family, having to do with what our worldview is once we are completely certain that there exists at least one or more other highly advanced technological civilizations in our galaxy or even in the universe. So that means that there'll be an entire octave of these worldviews. And depending upon what your worldview is, you will look out and perceive this issue of extraterrestrial intelligence in a way that is completely integrated into your worldview. Now, let me be clear about what this looks like. And what this means is that, as Talcott Parsons pointed out, that the worldview that a person has is completely dependent upon the way in which that person answers one of four different major fundamental questions of fact about reality itself. First question is the cosmological question. And that is what their opinion is about how the physical universe or the cosmos actually came into being. Mm-hmm. Whether it's always existed, whether it was created at one particular moment and will then come to an end at some other particular point in time,
mm-hmm.
or whether it has always existed. This cosmological question is a fundamental and profound question of ultimate fact that we have no completely dispositive answer to at the present time.
Right.
As you know, you hear about it all the time on radio and television shows, and the Cosmos show that is going now talks about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one that our human family has not come to a single definitive answer to as of yet.
Right.
So what happens is that people tend to speculate about that based on however much information they have. They speculate on that, but they tend to come to some at least unconscious conclusion in their own mind as to what the answer to that is, so they can find out differently. Then, secondly, there's a question they call the teleological question, and that's just a big fancy word for a question of what they believe the universe is doing. Is the universe unfolding from its point of origin, or at this particular point in its eternal existence, is the universe engaged in some kind of expansion or contraction or development along some kind of linear line from one point to another? In other words, is there some kind of ultimate end to our universe, an objective to our universe, some kind of purpose that is implied in the way the universe is unfolding, or not? Or is it just sort of chaotic and unpredictable, and no one can really find out anything ultimately about what the nature of the process that's going on in our universe is? But this is the second question, in addition to the cosmological question as to how the universe came into being. The second question is it developing or unfolding in some particular predictable, a linear manner that would suggest some kind of ultimate end or objective of our universe? The third of the four questions is this question, a very important question they call the ontological question. That's another big fancy word for the question of how consciousness came into being. That when you look out in into the universe and you see all the stars and the planets and the galaxy. You look into your own planet and you see the trees and the rivers and everything else. How did that one doesn't normally consider those objects to be conscious like we are, where we think about things, we reflect upon things, we feel emotions and all of that. So the question that arises is, how did consciousness like this actually evolve in the midst of this total collective of unconscious physical entities in the universe? We as human beings who perceive ourselves as being conscious find this to be an extraordinarily important question.
Right.
And so different people have different opinions about that. In fact, they have eight different opinions predicated upon their worldview.
Mm.
And then the fourth of these four major questions is what they call the epistemological question. Again, that's just another great fancy word that they use at university to mean the question of what means a given individual human being has at her or his disposal, by means of which we can possibly answer huge cosmic questions like that. Are we restricted to just the intake from our five normal predictable senses of, you know, touch, taste, sight, hearing, you know, smell? Are these the only means that we have, our sense perceptions, of taking in data and processing them through our intellect, mm-hmm. our rational mind,
right.
and coming to certain operational conclusions? Or are there potentially other means that we have? And even if you just, you know, amplify those particular five senses by telescopes or microscopes or amplification of sound or other things, they're still basically restricting themselves just our experience of our five senses,
right.
processing through our mind. But the question is, are there other means that we may have access to? For example, a lot of discussions you hear about there being a sixth sense or an extrasensory perception system that our human family has.
Right.
Others postulate that there's a spiritual faculty by means of which we can discern spiritual truths over and they're distinct from simple ESP things. They're considered to be different. And then there are other people who postulate that because of everything generally occurring in our universe pursuant to octaves, like sounds, you have do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, and that's a full octave of sound, or you have light, like red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and then white light. We tend to be able to experience things as human beings in octave sets. And so that there's an assumption that there may be a full set of eight faculties that our human species will discern ourselves as having over time.
Yes.
And what we see is that some people believe there's an evolutionary process going on, that we're in the process right now, for example, of developing this sixth sense, this extrasensory perception, this intuitional sense that we have, but it isn't fully evolved yet. We find some people who are having this thing, this experience, and others aren't quite yet. But that this idea that there may be a full set of eight different senses that we as fully evolved and perfected human beings may have, and that they're latent within our species at the present time. But this question, this epistemological question of how many means are there that we have at our disposal by means of which to gather information to ascertain truths regarding these major cosmic questions? And as to how you answer these four fundamental questions of fact, the cosmological question is how the universe came into being, the teleological question as to how it is unfolding towards some potential end or objective, the third one is the ontological question of how consciousness came into being, the fourth being what type of faculties we may have as human beings by means of which we can ascertain data to attempt to answer these questions.
Right.
Depending on how you answer those four questions, that if here's a key fact, that what is determined is that if a person answers each of those four questions in a way in which all the other three of the answers to your questions are completely consistent with how you answer any other one of those questions. So that all four questions are completely internally and self-referentially consistent with each other, that the answers are all consistent. That constitutes a clear worldview.
Right.
You see? Now, the thing is, if a person answers each of those four questions in a way that is completely inconsistent with the answer that they've given to each of the other four questions, the person has kind of a chaotic perception of things.
Right.
That they're not thinking rationally. They're not thinking consistently. And so, therefore, they don't really have an ascertainable worldview. They're just in a state of confusion. But if, in fact, a person answers all four of those questions in a way that is completely internally and self-referentially consistent with each of the other three answers that they've given, then that person has a worldview.
Right.
And what we've determined in long analysis of all of these things is that there are, in fact, eight different sets of conclusions you can come to, that each of which is completely internally self-referentially consistent.
Right.
And that means that there are eight different worldviews. And because of that, a given person who has, for example, an authoritarian worldview, they believe, for example, that the universe is in fact just expanding out and away from the locus of the Big Bang. They believe that it started at one particular point in time. It just sort of came into being with the Big Bang explosion, and it's expanding out and away from the locus of that Big Bang. And at the same time, while it's expanding out and away from the locus of the Big Bang, every single element in the entire universe, this on the periodic table, that 238 different elements that exist on the periodic table,
right.
Each one of those is disintegrating according to its atomic half-life.
Right.
And that it's disintegrating into its smaller constituent element. And then each one of those elements, in turn, is disintegrating into its smaller constituent element. So that the people who are adherents to this first paradigm worldview, they believe that the universe is expanding out and away from the locus of the Big Bang and disintegrating at the same time, so that ultimately it will disintegrate into absolute nothingness. That it will disintegrate into ultimately atoms, and then the atoms will disintegrate into electrons, and electrons will disintegrate into muons, and muons will disintegrate into leptons, and they'll eventually disintegrate into these ultimately irreducible inchoate quantum fields, and that each and every one of those will continue to expand out and away from every other one until such time as there is no thing in the entire universe.
Right.
There's no universe left. It's just expanded and diffused out into infinite and eternal space.
Right.
And that those people believe that therefore there's no ultimate purpose to anything.
Right.
There is no ultimate objective. There is no ultimate reference in accordance with which one can make any determination that it makes any difference which way a person responds any given situation.
Right.
And so they see the world as in the universe as inherently chaotic, and that there's no purpose or objective in the universe. And therefore, they believe that the only way to have any kind of order or predictability of anything in the universe is for some individual strong-willed person to superimpose, usually his, willpower upon the human community, and to establish a regime under his control where he predicts how things are going to be. He makes up the rules. He tells people what to do. He enforces it if they don't do that. And then what it does is it starts to lend a certain kind of predictability if the person is a responsible person. And so that generates an authoritarian worldview, because it's a mode of ethical reasoning. Once you answer these four questions in a way that it's, they're internally and self-referentially consistent with each other, what it does is it generates a principle which is common to the answer of every one of those four questions, which becomes one's own personal selfish self-interest.
Right.
And engage in the most immediate and intense sense of self-gratification that one can possibly engage in.
Right.
Because otherwise, what is there? Right?
Right.
And so it's that ultimate pursuit on the part of every individual of his or her own immediate self-interest over everybody else's that requires an authoritarian leader to assert their control over things to keep it from being just chaotic all the time.
Unbelievable. Danny Sheehan, one of the great legal minds in the world today. Check out the entire interview on YouTube on my channel, Goddess Sri. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Please look for new website information and new articles coming out from me immediately. We're on fire. In 14 weeks, we have the Congressional Hearings Initiative, so be ready. Have a wonderful week, and thank you for coming. Namaste.